Mr. Brown, Rail 9. Right, Mr. Brown, you were describing this business with the German idiot when they made the guns. Could you just carry on from there?
Yes, we were walking down. The Seahaw, as I said, had gone forward, and we were trying to find them going down this road. And suddenly, as I've described, the bank behind us, there were about three shells just went whoom, 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 just and whistled over our heads and, you know, near us and into the bank. And we immediately went to the side furthest away from the shells, naturally, and jumped down to go down the hill. And it was about, must have been from memory, about 6-8 feet down. And with a 38 set on your back, it was quite a lump to crump down on your back after you go down. So it was quite a leap. But we went down there just like gazelles, I think, and got the shock of our lives. But it just shows that these 88s were very accurate, and they were good armour piercing with tanks, or they were good for any sort of operation.
Now, with the tanks, was Colonel Worrell able to communicate directly with the tanks, or would that have to go, you know, via yourself, or would there be?
We never well, I didn't personally communicate with the tanks.
And what about in terms of his communications back to brigade? That would be through the brigade,
the brigade signalers.
How did you get on with the brigade, man? Was it the same ones all the time, or was it, did they change?
Yeah, we did get a couple that, you know, we got quite friendly with and got on well with, yes, no bother.
Now, you've mentioned artillery. What about the German air attacks? Were you troubled at all by the German Air Force?
No, I was never troubled with the German Air Force.
What about mines? Were they?
Yes, there were a problem at times. Once again, whereabouts in the Gothic line this happened, I don't know, but we were walking forward and passing a minefield, and one of our companies had passed by that way, and there was a chap in the minefield wounded, and there was another fellow shouted as we passed, "It's all right, you know, I'll get him out," and he was going forward on his stomach to get this chap out. So there were minefields around.
Was there any kind of training about, or, you know, kind of lectures about what these weapons, you know, which specific weapons were and how to avoid them and how to deal with them? Was any of that?
Are you talking about mines now?
Yeah.
Yes, we did have training for minefields. You had to use your little bayonet to stab the ground in front of you in an arc and see if you came across anything hard underground.
But your own personal experiences in Italy were...
I was never caught in a minefield.
Now, as you were moving up through the Gothic line, were there any... I mean, apparently there was drafts of people like, you know, Royal Artillery, ex-Royal Artillery men and so on, joining the battalion. Was the signal platoon ever affected by like new reinforcements coming in at this stage? Men that...
Well, people did seem to arrive, but there weren't any I can't remember any great big influx. Odd people like the ones, some a couple on here I couldn't remember the names of, came in.
Now, you were apparently, according to the battalion history, you moved up to the River Foglia, and there's a place called Mondaino. There was a big attack put in there. Can you remember much about that?
No.
And then to the Serra Ridge, which I think the next big...
Is that Germano?
No, along that prior to Germano. The River Conca, I think it was.
The River Conca, I remember the River Conca. Was the River Cassino, or was it Cassina, Conca? Marecchio, Rubicon. No, I don't remember much about that.
I mean, how was people's morale? I mean, you mentioned hill after hill, river after river, village after village. How was morale being affected by this time?
I think it graduated according to the length of time you'd been there, downhill.
And you'd been with the battalion quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
What did you personally? How did you think this was going to end? Because you know.
Well, we were just seemed to be hoping that we'd get off the mountains and down into the plain, where we wouldn't have to be going against mountain villages all the time. Because when you got to these mountain villages and looked back, you know, you could see the way you'd come, and you'd realise what beautiful positions the Germans had at times. And, you know, they were quite defensible positions. And with having this overview of people coming up valleys and so on, it made life very difficult.
Did any of that show in Colonel Worrell? Any of that kind of sense of just being up against a brick wall kind of thing? Was that something that he showed, or did he keep a...
He didn't communicate with us to that extent. He wouldn't tell us how he felt. But by the end of the Gothic line, I'm sure he was tired. He looked tired to me.
And you moved up to Germano, to the Germano sector.
Mm.
And you mentioned earlier in the interview that was a strategy of trying to go around rather than up the hill. Could you just describe what you remember about that period?
About Germano. Well, the colonel had gone up to Germano, closer to the front, and Danny and myself, a new young intelligence officer, were coming along in a carrier. And the terrain was so bad that the carrier just turned over. It didn't turn right over, it turned onto its side. It just went off and onto its side. And Danny and I were thrown off the top and not injured. And the officer was okay and the driver was okay. And the intelligence officer said, well, I've got to hurry on. You take your time with the set and come along. And that's what happened. But by the time we got up into the Germano area, when we got there, we learned that young new intelligence officer had been killed by a shell. And after that, it was just the shelling at Germano that I remember. I remember Walter Webley came back into headquarters. He was very badly shaken at Germano. And all I remember is the shelling.
How did people cope with that?
In various ways. You just had to cope the best you could.
So what was your way of dealing with it?
you just had to live through it. You weren't happy about it. You know.
Now, in terms of how Colonel Worrell had his battalion headquarters organised at Germano, can you remember much about that?
No, I can't. No.
And now, at this stage, would you, under this very heavy shell fire, would you have landlines to the companies? Or would you...
At Germano it was radio.
So the conditions were too difficult.
Lines, yeah. It wouldn't have been worth it with the shells in any case and getting through, and it was really too much.
Now, you were obviously in radio contact with people that were now your friends in the rifle companies. Were they able to? I mean, you mentioned earlier how you could, like, kind of slightly illicitly have conversations with each other. Were you able to do that at this stage?
No.
And during this period, this was kind of a bit of a stalemate, this attack on the Germano. Again, from your perspective with Colonel Worrell, what was your feelings about how, you know, how this, because this seemed to have been a stalemate with previous units before the 16th Battalion mm-hmm. got involved, and I think it was a bit of a stalemate afterwards as well. What did people feel about that whole, that specific action? Was it something that you realised was going to be difficult from the start, or was it something that became?
Well, I think, you know, people did realise that this was going to be difficult, and it proved to be difficult. That's all there was to it.
Right, Mr. Brown, we're still talking about Jamar now, just a general question on the issue of what's since been described as battle fatigue. Was it possible to sense that somebody was maybe possibly on the edge of shell shock?
Yes, I think you could see people affected, and even if you didn't see at that time they're being affected, you could tell at times when the word went round the battalion or the officers have been called to an O group, and then you could feel people tensing up, and the word would come back, finally we're moving up tomorrow morning back into the line. And then you could see the people. What I noticed mainly was in the eyes. They were no longer steady. They couldn't sort of look you in the eye. And there seemed to be a sense of silence somehow come over the company you were with. And hijinks and any horseplay seemed to cease. And the whole thing seemed to quieten down. And I suppose people were then wrapped up in their own thoughts about what they felt, you know, how they were coping and so on. But I think you could see the ones that were really finally being affected. And there's no doubt that, I think I mentioned before, that I think courage is expendable. And as people were going through these abnormal experiences, their resistance was being diminished as time went on, and the Gothic line seemed to go on forever. And I think at the end, a lot of people were really quite weary.
So that was something that was affecting everybody to a lesser or greater extent.
Oh yes, it affected officers and other ranks. It affected everybody.
Now, do you think the medical officer and the medical sergeant and so on, were they aware of an individual maybe being on the edge? Or would it be possible to say to the medical officer or the medical sergeant, just to say, you know, this particular person is...
I don't know if that happened. It might have happened from the companies. I don't remember it ever happening to or about anybody in the signal platoon. But I couldn't say that it didn't happen in other cases. In fact, I was told, in fact, I saw him, the chap who'd been shouting to us, "It's all right, I'll get him out of the minefield." Later on, he was in the company of the RSM, and I was told that he'd been affected. And I saw him walking back, sort of out of the line with the RSM, and he'd been badly affected. So that it just goes to show you that, you know, you can't go on forever.
So do you think the army had a sympathetic attitude to men that were affected then?
I think by this time the army probably had a more sympathetic attitude than they did in the First World War, when people were seriously affected and were given no quarter. I think probably people had begun to realise that this did affect people, and there were, in some instances, physically impaired because of it.
And so if it did happen to somebody that you knew, what would your reactions be to that person? I mean, generally in the battalion, if somebody had been, you know, sent back for medical treatment for that condition, but I suppose it would be sympathy more than...
I think it would be sympathy.
Any other memories of this period at Germano? During this, I mean, there's this period of very heavy German. Was that, again, maybe keeping on the subject of shell shock, was that principally caused, do you think, by artillery fire, or was it other factors?
Oh, I don't think it would be principally caused by shell fire. I think it would be a sort of accumulation of experiences. It might be machine guns. It might be minefields. The general tension of being there. It all mounted up, I think.
So the term shell shock was...
Shell shock was, I think, probably from the First World War. And, I mean, it would be largely shell shock, but I don't think it was only shell shock. It was just the fact of, you know, your life being on the line day after day, from various angles.
So it was the accumulation of experience.
That's right.
So do you think would it be more liable to affect somebody that had been with the battalion for a long time, or could it affect somebody that had just joined the week before? Or?
I suppose it depends on your mentality and your inner strength, but far more likely to affect somebody who'd been there a long time, certainly.
So, you got through Germano. What happened then? What was the next thing you can remember?
I think the next thing I remember is Cesena. Don't seem to remember much in between.
Apparently there was the Bagliano Spur. Was a big action there?
No, I don't remember.
And then there was Cesena. Yeah, so if we could remember that.
Yeah, it seemed to be my point of view, the same as, not the same as Germano, it wasn't as bad as that, but I just remember walking up, you know, well, a line of us walking up to get into the monastery at Cesena, which was empty by that time. We got inside, and that was heavily shelled. And there was dust flying all over the place. But in that instance, as far as I was concerned, I somehow felt quite secure there. I thought, well, they can shell this all day and I don't mind, because, you know, you felt quite safe behind the thick walls. And we weren't affected much. The dust flew about and settled down and flew about again. And after that, we moved down into the town. And I remember walking along the normal single file of soldiers going along one side of a road. And that was the only time I saw a photographer. There was a photographer on the other side of the road. But I think he'd seen enough straggling lines of soldiers by that time. And I don't think he bothered to put us on the newsreel.
Now, apparently there is an Imperial War Museum photograph of British troops entering Cesena that's been attributed to the 16th DLI.
Oh, yeah.
And, right, we're still talking about Cesena, and you mentioned entering this place. Was there still civilians in the town?
Oh, yes, there were still civilians in the town.
And were they still trying to kind of lead normal lives despite this...
Well, I didn't see them living lives, but, you know, they came out and they were quite friendly. Seemed quite happy that we were there, and probably quite happy that the war had passed over them and they could get back to their normal lives again.
Generally in Italy at this period, how did the battalion get on with the local people, and how did the locals treat the battalion?
As far as I can remember, they treated the battalion very well, and I particularly remember that we were fortunate because Tony Sacco, of course, was from Italian extraction, and he could speak some Italian, so that if we stuck near Tony, he'd take us into places where we normally wouldn't have thought of going, and being able to speak to the locals. And I remember once helping them with the harvest, stripping the sweet corn, the husk off the sweet corn with Tony. So if there was any vino going around, you know, Tony would be useful with the dispatch riders to carry it back and forwards to arrange for some vino.
And was it possible to get this vino on a regular basis?
Not regular, but we got it from time to time.
And was that known to kind of your NCOs and your officers? Was that tolerated?
Well, I should think so. Mm. They would probably have a drink as well.
Now, apparently at Cesena, the battalion was involved with tanks, and apparently some of the signal platoon were actually put inside the tanks.
Yes.
Of that?
No, I don't remember anything about it. I remember Ronnie Elliott telling me that he'd been in a tank, and he said it was all right because he felt very good in there when the machine gun bullets were just peppering on the outside. It didn't affect him at all. He was the only one that I ever remember saying that had been in a tank.
And you didn't envy him?
No, I always felt as a soldier, you know, I've talked to people in the Navy, one of my friends was in the Navy, and people in the Air Force. And after the war, I didn't think about this during the war, but after the war I thought, well, the infantryman's lot isn't a very happy one, but at least they've got to hit you. If you're in a ship, it's a big target. They can hit a ship. If you're in a plane, it's not a large target, but it is possible to hit it. And even if you're in a tank, they can hit the tank, which is a much bigger object. And I thought, well, in a way, if they wanted to do anything to me, they had to hit me, and I was a much smaller target than any of the things I've talked about.
So it was a lesser of two evils. Now, apparently, after the entry into Cesena, according to the battalion history, some men were able to go and leave to Rome. Do you remember anything about that?
No, I don't. Mm.
Now, you've mentioned Colonel Worrell, and his personality made a big impression when you've talked about that. Are there any other officers that you have memories of that stood out? I mean, obviously we've talked about Captain Harris. Anybody else within the area of the people that you were with at this stage?
No, there's an adjutant that Colonel Warren must have been away somewhere, and we had to, you know, go to some places with the adjutant and go forward with him on a couple of occasions, I think. And he was in the same mould. He was very, very good, very calm, very steady. But I don't think I came into contact with many other officers actually in the line, except for Captain Harris, as we've mentioned.
Now, as we move through the Gothic Line period, ads. There been any new kind of equipment, was there any kind of modifications to those standard radios, standard equipment that you were using?
No, don't remember any.
So it was just the same kit that you had?
Same kit, yeah.
Any other memories of this Gothic Line period? Any other incidents that stand out?
No, I can't remember any offhand.
Because apparently there was the Cesena Canal was one of the next.
The Cesena, it was a canal, was it? I remember the name, but I can't remember anything about it.
happened then?
Well, we, from memory, we were supposed to wait for the Leicesters or somebody to take Fawley Airfield. We'd moved down into a bit of a flatter area, and I didn't feel comfortable at all in the flat areas. After being in the hills so much, you felt very exposed when you were down there. And that was what I understand. We were waiting for the Leicesters to take Fawley Airfield, and we would move forward and go through, you know, after that. And we were near Faenza. I remember I must have been out doing a line or something, and standing at a crossroads and looking towards Faenza, which was still supposed to be occupied by some Germans at that stage. And then suddenly the word went round that we were being pulled out. And we were pulled out, and we went back down to Rome eventually. And then we found that we were going to fly over from Rome to Greece. And it was the first time I'd been in a plane, Dakotas, and no seats, of course. You just sat on the floor with your kit, and landing at Athens Airport.
How did you react to the news that you were going to Greece?
Well, I think most people were glad to be out of the Gothic Line. I think by that time people were tired, they were really weary.
So that was the state of the battalion when you came out?
Yeah, they were tired, I think.
And what about the aircraft? Were people airsick?
No, I don't remember anybody being airsick. It was quite, you know, a lark, more or less, being able to peer out of the holes and look down on the blue sea and so on.
And were they British aircraft or crewed? Were they British crewed or American?
Don't know.
You didn't have any contact?
No.
Now, you were going to Greece. Obviously, you found out the situation when you got there. Mm. But what was the word amongst yourselves about why you were going to Greece? Did you have any idea?
No, I didn't have any idea. But, you know, you're soon introduced to Greece, because even on the trucks from the airport to Athens itself, you know, there's some sniping going on, and I know one of the lads was wounded going along in the trucks to Athens.
So you realised you were in a different, another conflict, but a conflict nonetheless.
Well, you began to realise it then, that there was something going on.
So you arrived at Athens Airport. Could you just take us through how, what the battalion, you got off these planes, you got on these trucks. What happened? Where did you? I mean, how did Worrell set up his headquarters and so on? Where was it?
Oh,
I can't remember about that.
I can't remember much about that at all. I just remember getting into Athens and, you know, having a set and walking round. If you went round a corner, of course, the set didn't work. It wasn't, you know, very good in high-rise buildings and things. And I suppose the headquarters was set up in Athens, but I really don't know much about it. You know, I remember that one of the company seat must have been C, no, B company, I think, because Tommy Gaffney was on the set in this company, and they were sent to occupy the Acropolis. And once again, one of these little things over the wireless, he came up to say how cold it was and how dreadful it was, because you couldn't dig in on the Acropolis, and they were stuck on this, you know, and it was December by that time, stuck on the side of a rocky hill, and the beauty of the Parthenon and the Acropolis was entirely lost, completely lost.